Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller. Happy to have you along today as we begin the show and probably finish the show as well by talking with you about all those aches and pains that can develop through fall sports, garden cleanup, and a whole host of other things. Our guest today, Bill Boisenall, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic of the UW Hospitals and Clinics. Bill, great to have you back.
Thank you, Larry. Good to be back once again. And it is fall. Happy fall to everybody.
Yeah, it is fall. Lori Tyne Brody, our guest as well, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. She's also the graduate program director for the Rocky Mountain University of Health Professionals in Provo, Utah. And Lori?
It's good to be here. And speaking of fall, you know, it's also time to think about preventing falls on the ice.
Yeah.
Not that anyone wants to think about ice just yet, but,
right.
You know.
But come fall, come winter. Yes.
You can feel it in the air. Yeah,
exactly.
So lots of fall sports going on. You know, the time to be training for those was actually the summer. But now that we're into them, you know, even though the weather's cool, people still need to stay hydrated. People, because it's a little bit cooler, maybe need to spend a little bit more time warming up, making sure they're loosened up before their activity. And for many of those sports, football, volleyball, soccer, you know, as part of that warm up, doing some good jumping and postural training exercises to make sure that they understand good body mechanics through jumping, landing, and moving on the field, keeping knees flexed, knees over toes, hips and knees in alignment is going to prevent some of those knee injuries.
Yeah, also, as this time of the year, our days shrink. And so people exercise in the morning, which used to be daylight, now it's darker, or later in the evening. Just be careful. It's if you're running on paths, be careful with, you know, getting footwear and hopefully not tripping over something. And if you're running on streets or sidewalks, some sort of reflective clothing as well. But biking and running for sure.
Yeah, we have four people ran by our home this morning, and I happened to be looking straight out, and they were in the street and not a bit of reflective clothing at all.
Yeah.
And it was pitch dark. I mean, I could make them out because of the light in the house across the street.
Yeah. It's really dangerous, and there are far too many car versus pedestrian accidents.
Yeah. Well, Phyllis in Waupaca has a question for you, so let's go to her. Hi, Phyllis.
Hello. I wondered, I have a problem with the muscle spasms frequently, and so it's gotten to the point where I take about 300 milligrams of ibuprofen almost every morning. My question is it harmful over the long term to be taking ibuprofen every day?
Well, that's a good question, and certainly something that you should discuss with your physician or your pharmacist. You know, there are people who take things like ibuprofen and other anti-inflammatories for long periods of time due to arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, and various kinds of pathologies. The question is why you're taking it and if something else could be done to so that you wouldn't have to take it every day. But, you know, like I said, many people do take it on a regular basis, but not knowing what other health comorbidities you might have, what your general health status is, liver, kidneys, things like that, it's not something you should just dismiss and say, oh, it's okay.
Yeah. You know, ibuprofen is one of the many non-steroidals that you can go to any drugstore and purchase over the counter. And so the assumption would be, well, if I can just walk in and buy it without telling my physician, it must be safe. And they're relatively safe, but there are definitely risks. And with the NSAIDs in particular, the stomach, the gastrointestinal system, kidney problems, blood pressure, it can cause increased blood pressure in people. So it is not a benign medication. And so Phyllis, Lori's right. Just make sure you talk to your physician, let them know how long you've been taking it, how much you've been taking, and they can help guide you in terms of dose and is this the right medication for you.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Phyllis. Appreciate it. Linda in Wanakee, we go to you now. Hi, Linda.
Hi there. I'm calling because I'm going to have a hip replaced in November. I'm doing some exercising like on my stationary bike, doing some bridge with a pillow between my knees and some work to keep the muscles loose. Do you have any other recommendations?
Well, it sounds like you're doing some good things. So the biking is good. The strengthening of your hip muscles is good. Typically, you'll be seen in physical therapy prior to your surgery, and you will be instructed in the strengthening exercises that you'll be going through post-op so that you can learn how to do them prior to being in a fair amount of pain post-operatively. So strengthening exercises for your hips, walking if you can do that. Water exercise classes are always good for people. So anything to maintain your strength and mobility. You don't want to have an overall decline in your physical condition prior to your surgery. You want to keep yourself as strong and healthy and mobile as you can.
And lose some weight, maybe.
Lose some weight, maybe. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So water exercise tends to be a good option for people, especially if they have pain with weight bearing, because they tend to be in long enough duration to get some of the aerobic benefits and some of the weight loss. They tend to hit strengthening and mobility, as well as some continuous cardiovascular exercise.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. And Diane in Pulaski, your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi, good morning, Larry, and to your guests. I have a question about my 17-year-old daughter. She runs cross country, and she's been getting a really sharp stab in her side. It's like a stitch. And one coach said she doesn't have strong enough abdominal muscles. Another one said it's dehydration. The other one said it's her breathing. So what could it be?
All three?
That's probably all three.
it could be. Actually, there's a number of probably half a dozen different theories as to what causes this stitch. And it's very painful. It's sharp and can come on fairly quickly. And there's some debate about what is the cause. And is it the respiratory diaphragm? There are small joints in the back, facet joints that are sometimes considered to be a source. And some of the ligaments supporting the visceral structures. Anyone or a combination of those. And so the dehydration part, I mean, that's probably the easiest one to work on. And if she is well hydrated or increases hydration and it doesn't change, then you can probably rule that one out. If she has any history of back pain, then it might be worth seeing a physical therapist so they can examine her and see if this stitch is related to her vertebral column or her spine or not. Sometimes I've had patients who've come in, I've had them run until they get the stitch, and then I examine them. And sometimes I find things that I couldn't find when basically they're pain-free. But if this has been, you know, persistent for more than a couple weeks and is not getting any better, you know, if she sees her physician, they can rule out any of the abdominal visceral things that might be causing this, or a physical therapist to check out her back.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She does have a curve in her back.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
She does have that. So.
Okay. Well, that might set her up for this. And if that is the case, then there are exercises and things that can be done to help eliminate it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Diane. Appreciate it. An email from Larry in Rudolph, Wisconsin. I'm almost 70 and planning a marathon this fall. At 13 miles in training, I encountered significant pain in my right knee and the lateral joint. It subsides when I walk and returns as I run, even if only at a crawl. I continue to want to finish the marathon. What exercises, cross-training techniques, or other solutions would allow me to run-walk a marathon?
Well, I guess my first response is, if it subsides when he walks, then at this point he probably could walk the marathon. So it's possible that he could finish it if he's willing to walk. The question is, what's causing the pain in the lateral side of his knee? If he's kind of knock-kneed, could be some arthritis in the outside of his knee. Probably the most likely culprit is some arthritis in the outside of his knee, or some degenerative meniscus in the outside of his knee. The other possibility is it's just his iliotibial band, which is also on the outside of your knee. So it depends upon if it's in the joint or outside the joint. And a good physical exam would help elucidate the source of the pain. So looking at his postural alignment, his lower extremity mechanics when he runs might point to the source of the pain, and then you would treat it that way. So if he had some biomechanical malalignments in the lower extremity, those might be remedied with an orthotic to help improve his alignment, some specific stretching and strengthening exercises, and some specific targeted therapies at his knee. If the problem is simply wear and tear at his knee, then we would be looking at alternative cross training to help him maintain his fitness so he can do the marathon. So the bottom line is he really needs to be evaluated to find out what the source of the pain in the lateral side of his knee is so that you're directed towards the appropriate treatment.
Okay. So that might be a meniscus then?
It could be a meniscus. It could be some arthritis in the lateral compartment of his knee, or it could be outside his knee in the iliotibial band.
Let's turn to Brad in Madison next. Hi, Brad. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I have herniated discs between L4, L5, L5, S1, and I try to walk 3 miles about 5 times a week, and lately I've been getting a sensation in the mornings when I wake up. It's like kind of like I'm standing on a marble in my left foot. And wondering what would cause that sensation or what I should be doing to prevent that, because, of course, you don't want to go into full, you know, arrest.
Is it in the heel of your foot?
No, it's in the ball of my foot.
The ball.
Okay. So, Brad, when you say a marble, I'm visualizing something fairly small. It's a fairly small spot?
Yeah, fairly small, yeah.
Okay. Are you thinking it's related to your back, or is it a separate foot issue?
I think everything is related to my back nowadays.
Okay, all right. Well, it's probably a logical place to start anyways. With herniated discs, and the L4, 5, L5, S1, the bottom of our spine is the most common location, and they can cause sensation changes in down into the leg and into the feet. First thing in the morning, we tend to be a little taller. Our discs swell in our spine when we sleep at night. And then during the day as we sit and walk and stand, we push a little fluid out of the discs. So mornings can be a more symptomatic time for people with certain types of disc problems. If it's a marble, if it's a local tender spot where you push on it and it's exquisitely tender, then it could be a local foot problem. But if it's more, when you push there, if you feel like the skin doesn't feel normal, the sensation's a little duller, then it could be nerve related. Again, I guess that would be the question for you, because I've had people describe like there's a pad underneath the ball or foot that they didn't have before, and that usually goes on with sensation changes.
Mm-hmm.
So is this marble, is it exquisitely painful, or is it more kind of a numb spot?
No, just kind of a, like I say, just kind of a numb spot. Just
okay.
Kind of feel, like I say, it feels like I have a marble down there.
Yeah, okay. All right, 1 foot or both feet?
Just my left foot.
Okay, all right. And how long has this been going on?
Just the last week.
Okay.
And it goes away by midday.
Okay. All right. Well, that's important. I guess what I would do is, if it doesn't start resolving within the next week or two, then I would go in and be seen.
Okay.
And have your back examined. Someone can do a good neurological screen for you. And if there's something you can point to, what's different compared to 3-4 weeks ago? Did you change walking shoes? Are you walking on a different surface? Have you been doing more sitting than usual? That might tie into your back.
Okay.
And if you can, correct any of those things. But another week or two, or if that marble seems to be getting larger, then go in and be seen.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Talking aches and pains and how to deal with them with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, UW physical therapists. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have an ache, a pain that you're dealing with, I hope you'll join in and pose your question or comment to Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our UW physical therapist. Great to have them along. Thank you for listening. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. 1-800-642-1234. An email from Pat. And by the way, you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm a male in my late 50s and going to have meniscus surgery later in October to have the torn 15 to 20% of my left medial meniscus removed. Would you discuss rehab? I'm a former marathoner and would like to be able to run 13 miles by spring.
Yeah, many, many issues to consider, and I'll try to be concise about the issues. So I'm going to hope that since he's a marathoner that his body mass is, he's pretty thin, so he's not overweight, so that's in his favor. Another factor to consider is his knee alignment. If he has a varus knee or he's somewhat bowed-legged, that's going to be harder to recover from that medial meniscus than if he has normal alignment. So we want to look at his knee alignment. That's going to be a predictor. His age is also a predictor, and unfortunately, he's on the wrong side of that. If you lose your meniscus over age 35, your knee tends to degenerate more quickly. That being said, we don't really know much about Pat's parents and the kind of joint surfaces he was given. So if he got, you know, Pirellis for joint surfaces, he may recover from this and be back on his way, no problem. If he got $10 retreads, then he's going to have a harder time recovering because his joint surfaces are going to be seeing more load than they had previously. So my recommendation would be to keep his hips strong, keep his quadriceps really strong, work his way back into his running slowly, because his joint surface is going to have time to adapt to a new loading pattern. And how well his knee adapts is up in the air based upon a number of variables. So do everything you can to keep it in your favor. Stay strong, keep your body weight low, keep your hips strong, keep your muscles flexible, run on a soft surface like a track or a trail or something like that. If you're concerned about this and you're having recurrent swelling after your surgery, you really should get in and get guided back to your running so that you don't do the start and stop over and over again, so that you give your joint surfaces time to heal after your surgery.
We have John in Caledonia up next with a question. Hi, John.
Hello. Yes, I have just a quick question. I about a month ago, started getting just a real sharp pain in my right shoulder. Did some landscaping this summer, and it's about an inch down from the top of the bone where it was just like somebody was just inserting something. It seems to be going down a little lower, and my question is, should I exercise that out, or should I rest it?
Is it going down the front or down the outside?
The outside.
The outside. Okay.
Yeah.
And have you had anything like this before?
No. It just all of a sudden started. If I go to, like, if I'm sitting in the chair and lift my arm up to turn on a light.
Yep.
Real sharp pain.
Yep. Okay. And how about at rest and at night?
At night, it's trouble sleeping.
Okay. All right. I'd suggest getting in to see somebody about it. You probably stirred up your rotator cuff and your subacromial bursa there, and you can get some very specific directed exercises at your rotator cuff to help resolve this and prevent it from coming back. If you're not over the hump, sometimes a cortisone injection into that bursa gives your rotator cuff a little bit more room to function, and the exercises can be more effective. But given the symptoms and the trouble you're having at night, it tells me this it's a pretty significant inflammation you have going on, and you'll probably need a little guidance to get it back under control.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And a Facebook question from Lois. My daughter's 13. Her main sports are basketball and pitcher, fast pitch softball. She pitches and plays first base. Her right hip has been clicking periodically for over a year. It's increased to both hips with pain. Scheduled to see a sports medicine physician tomorrow. What advice do you have for the type of info the doctor will need and how to get a teenage girl to listen to her mother on the importance of stretching?
Well,
start with the easy part first, Laura.
Well, being the mother of a preteen, I can say, you know, this may not be where you want to ride her on this issue. So, you know, I'd have to say stretching, especially in girls, is equivocal. Most girls are sufficiently mobile for most activities. What they tend to lack is strength. So if I were going to harp on her about anything, it would be about hip strength and posture, because those tend to be the two variables that produce the best outcomes, more so than stretching. So if I was going to get after about anything, it'd be strengthening and posture in her lower extremity. And you'll get much farther with that in terms of prevention of injury than you will with stretching. So that being said, the clicking in her hip, she could have some labral issues going on in her hip, especially if now it's both. And again, most of the time, those are related to your hip and lower extremity posture. So I'm glad she's going to see the sports medicine physician. They will start off with an exam and see if they can determine the source of the clicking. And if it seems like it's extra-articular or outside the joint, they may start with some physical therapy, probably directed towards her hip strength and her lower extremity posture, and see how far you get with that. If she doesn't make any progress with that, probably the next step would be an MRI. Of her hip to look at the joint and see if she has some femoral acetabular impingement, which is probably the most next common thing in teenage girls that happens inside the joint.
Yeah, I mean, kind of one thing related to, you know, teenagers listening to us at any point in time. One thing for Lois to consider is, assuming Lois is going with her daughter to the visit, is maybe let her daughter go in with the physician without Lois being there for the entire visit. Sometimes teenagers are willing to share a little more if the parents aren't there. Parents can ask to be brought in at the end of the visit when they're discussing what they found and what the plan is. Doesn't work all the time, but sometimes I can facilitate making sure all the information gets to the physician that they need.
That's great advice, Dr. Phil.
Been there, done that.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, we have a Facebook question from Travis, who's 65, hit by a car a couple of years ago, suffered a T12 compression fracture and some lumbar disc damage. It's still moderately painful during the forced inactivity. He lost a lot of muscle mass. This year, he resumed home workouts, mostly exercise with minimal equipment. My only equipment now is a pull-up bar. Definition is returning, except for my shoulder and area deltoids. Trainer recommend I get free weights and do power cleans, deadlifts, squats, etc. to build those areas. If I start out slow, don't overextend, you think it's a good idea? I don't want to talk to my physician about this because I haven't seen him since the accident. He wants me to come in for films and an evaluation I can't afford now.
Yeah. Well, strengthening is certainly a good idea. And if the shoulders are weak, when you lift and push and pull things, then more stress falls on the back. So it is an important area. The question is, what's the most appropriate way and safest way to strengthen those muscle groups? A couple of the exercises that Travis described, the deadlifts and things, put a tremendous amount of stress on the spine, on the area where the fractures occurred a couple years ago. And generally with compression fractures, it's the front part of the vertebra, the vertebral body, that actually collapses a bit. That's where the fracture occurs. And what stresses that area is when we bend forward, and especially when we're lifting weights, adding more resistance, or doing weightlifting directly overhead where there's more direct pressure through that part of the vertebra that was injured. So weights are a good thing, but my recommendation would be is don't do any weightlifting where you're bending. And getting an incline bench would be really good. Having the back supported during the lifts would be very helpful. Incline bench has a hinge, or actually a bench has a hinge, so you can be sitting at a 45-degree upright at a 45-degree angle. You can do things lying on your back or on your stomach. Will again help avoid the pressure going straight down through the spine and help you avoid the bending. So I wouldn't recommend the lifts that are listed there. Weightlifting is very important and a good way to strengthen. If Travis can afford it, can swing even one visit to a physical therapist, they could show him as much what not to do as what to do and set him up with a good home program. And in terms of the financial side of things and not wanting tests, again, making sure that the physician knows up front what the concerns are as well as a physical therapist, and usually the practitioners can work around that.
We have Kate in Barneveld up next with a question. Hi, Kate.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am pushing 40, and I have a clicking sound in my knee that has been going, it's been ongoing for, I would say, at least 6 to 8 months. It happens without fail every time I go upstairs or a steep incline. Like with every step that my right knee takes on an incline, I hear a little click. So far, I don't have a whole lot of pain. When we do a lot of hiking and stuff, and if I do experience pain in my joints, it is in that knee. But generally speaking, pain is not an issue yet. But what I would like to know is this something that it would behoove me to get checked out now while I'm still relatively pain-free? Is it something that's likely to get worse with time? Is it likely to get worse with increased activity?
Okay.
So those are my questions. Because, you know, in spite of the sore knee, I'm going to chase after my toddler.
Right.
And I'll take my call off the air.
Can you answer one question first before you go?
Yes.
Where does the clicking seem to be coming from? Is it from around your kneecap or is it deep inside your joint?
It seems to be around the kneecap.
Okay.
I would say maybe like, I guess if I had to, because it isn't painful typically,
right.
You know, it's hard to pinpoint.
Right.
But I would say it seems almost like it's on like the inside and under edge of that cap.
Yep. Okay. Perfect.
So I'll go off that. Thank you.
All right.
That's probably patellofemoral pain, or we call it patellofemoral pain, but she isn't having pain yet. It's just clicking. And when you bend and straighten your knee, especially well, also in a weight-bearing position, as in going up the stairs, your kneecap slides through a groove in your femur bone or your thigh bone. And so you basically have articular cartilage on articular cartilage that's gliding, and it's supposed to glide like a train in a track, but it rarely does, especially in women, because of our lower extremity and hip alignment. So what tends to happen is you get little clicking as you get a little fraying and wear and tear of the articular cartilage on the undersurface of your kneecap. So what we do, and we see a tremendous number of people with this problem, and I think that it was good of Kate to call and say, should I get this seen sooner? And it would make sense to go in and see a physical therapist, especially given her activity level. And we can do an examination and get her set up on some home exercises that she can do to prevent this from getting worse. Because inevitably, if she is pretty active, it's probably going to at some point become painful. Much of the treatment is focused at, again, lower extremity alignment, and we're finding that some correction from the foot up helps some people. Many people are helped with correction from the hip down, and that is strengthening around the hip joint, which changes the alignment of your kneecap at the knee and improves its tracking through that groove. So one or two visits with a physical therapist to get set up on some postural exercises and some strengthening exercises would be a good idea.
Okay, let's move on to Kate in Eau Claire next. Hi, Kate.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I broke my leg about a year and a half ago, and it's all healed up, and I've been to physical therapy back when I was first healing. And now my right foot, which is the leg I broke, my right foot turns out. And when I was doing physical therapy, they said the way to fix that was to consciously turn the foot forward when I walk. And, of course, I tried to do that, but the minute I stopped thinking about it, it turns back out again. Is there something else I could be doing?
Kate, was it your lower leg, the fracture, or was it up in the thigh bone? Do you know?
It was my lower leg, and I dislocated my foot 90 degrees when it happened.
Okay.
And I have pins in the leg and everything. Oh, it was terrible. I have pins in my leg still, and it was a butterfly fracture of my tibia. But it's all, you know, it's all healed and pain-free. It's just now my foot turns out.
Yeah, okay. Well, good. Well, the big thing is the bone has to heal and has done that. You know, it's, when this happens, the question is it structural, meaning is it now the shape and direction the bone is that's causing this, or is it more soft tissue muscle adaptation? And my guess would be it's probably more structural. You know, consciously trying to fight that and turn your foot in, you know, sometimes that can help a little bit, but in the long run, you can end up causing muscles to fatigue and tendonitis to develop.
Would an X-ray show?
Well, not necessarily. Yeah, no. That's a good question. Would an X-ray show that it might, but not necessarily so? You know, probably your orthopedic surgeon would know the best, since they help piece your leg back together, and they've seen all kinds of imaging. But my guess is, when you're describing the injury, if it's structural, I just wouldn't fight it. And, you know, footwear is important for you because you could develop some secondary issues in your foot, you know, tendonitis and things. So having really good footwear would be important. But at this stage, I'm not sure just trying to force it to turn it in as you walk consciously. I don't think that's going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, it's really, hard to tell where the turning out is coming from. I mean, typically turning out comes from your hip, but it could also come from your lower leg if there was rotation in your fracture. And then you also said your foot was dislocated, or your ankle is dislocated 90 degrees. It could be coming from anywhere in your foot and ankle. So without knowing the source of where the turning out is coming from, I'd be hard-pressed to tell you to turn your foot in, because it's that's going to cause a compensation at your hip that your hip may not like.
Yeah. Well, how can we find out what's causing it? An X-ray or a soft tissue?
Well, I guess I'd agree with Bill that the first stop would be back at your orthopedic surgeon and have an exam there, because that person put you back together.
Yeah.
And the second question is, you know, is it bothersome? Does it cause pain or symptoms? And it may just be what it is.
Okay. Yeah. Will it cause a complication if I try to start exercising and running? Am I going to be tripping myself up?
That's hard to say. I would say probably not, because there's people with all kinds of lower extremity, gait, asymmetries that do just fine. But without seeing you and seeing you move and looking at what systems or structures are going to be stressed by your running, I can't say.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling. Scott in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Scott.
Hi, I also have a question about my athletic daughter, but mine is a little bit different because she doesn't actually have any injuries. She's doing things that sure look like they ought to cause injuries, and they're not. And so I'm wondering if you can tell me whether she's likely to hurt herself. She's she's doing martial arts, specifically Aikido, and if you don't know it, you might think of like jiu-jitsu. It's joint locks and that kind of thing. And especially with her shoulder joints, she's exceptionally mobile. And when her training partners put her in submission holds, she never submits because she never gets to the point where it actually hurts. And they're twisting her to the point where everyone's grimacing because they can't imagine what it must feel like. And she's sort of yawning, and it feels like a nice gentle stretch to her. And I'm wondering if she's likely to injure herself doing this. And I should say, I know you had talked about strength before. She's super strong. I mean, she's a swimmer as well. So she has a lot of muscle strength in there as well as exceptional mobility.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the double-edged sword, especially in swimming, with the mobility and the strength. We know that people with hypermobile joints are prone to injuries. And so, you know, my first question is she systemically hypermobile? Are all of her joints hypermobile? And if so, she needs some protective strengthening reflexes. So it's hard to say whether she's going to hurt herself. I would say if she is systemically hypermobile in most of her joints, she is at a higher risk for injury. It sounds like some of the positions and postures she's getting in are putting her at risk for injury. How old is she?
She's 11.
11. Yeah, I think as she moves up in this and encounters stronger opponents, she is going to be at risk.
Okay. I mean, she is training with adults now. So, yeah. You know, that's certainly something that I've been worrying about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're concerned, I'd take her in and have her evaluated. And I guess she's 11 now, but, you know, under the umbrella of preseason screening, you know, you could use that as your cover.
Sure.
That typically athletes get screened by their physician and usually an athletic trainer or a sports physical therapist for their injury risk. And then they get set up on programs to prevent injuries. So you could take her in and have her seen under that sort of guise of injury prevention.
On a kind of related note, she also, because it's a Japanese discipline, they spend a lot of time in that formal kneeling position, the seiza position, where you're kneeling on your knees and sitting back with your weight on your heels. And she doesn't claim to be uncomfortable there. Most of the other adults in her class can't maintain that position very long. And I'm wondering, is she going to hurt herself over the long term, or is she going to get used to it and, you know, that'll just become part of her normal range of motion.
That's a good question. I mean, historically, people, for example, in the Far East who spend a lot of time in a squat position, they adapt to that because they've done it for generations and generations, and their bodies and their joints have adapted to that. I can't say that it's true in our country. I think you're probably more likely to see what you're seeing, and that is at the young age you can do it, and as you get older, you can't.
You can't.
Right. Yeah. Scott, the one thing I guess I would probably be a little more concerned about her shoulders and the submission holds. Maybe if you can work with the martial arts instructor, when people are putting her in these holds, they shouldn't. The goal shouldn't be that she yelps and says, "I'm done" or "I quit." But, you know, if you can stay away from the end of the range of motion of her shoulders during these related to these submission holds, that'll help protect the shoulders a bit.
Sure.
Again, I'm not sure if that's feasible or not during the practice, but
yeah, and I mean, I don't mean to overstate. You know, it's not like they're up there cranking on her until she yelps. But right. It's typically this thing where someone will, you know, work the joint until they feel the end of the range of motion, and then you tap and. Okay, I'm pinned.
Yeah.
And she
yeah.
never reaches this point where she feels like she's really trapped.
Right, yeah. Right.
Ooh.
Well, if your daughter can, and again, this is not easy, but she can recognize that she's probably going to be pinned. And again, if she can tap before she reaches, before the arm limb is down on the floor again. I mean, any little thing to protect a joint can only be a good thing. But I think Lori's thought of kind of a pre-athletic screen would be helpful here. And then they could look at both the upper limbs and her lower limbs as well.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Just thinking about my own daughter who had her first soccer game on the weekend. And I'm thinking, oh, soccer, you know, it's a pretty mild sport.
Non-contact sport, right?
Yeah, what a, you know, and I've watched it, soccer, you know, but when my own daughter's out there and they're falling and rolling and landing on their heads, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, there really is no such thing as a non-contact sport, I don't think.
Maybe cross-country.
Oh, maybe.
Until you fall.
Yeah,
until you fall. Until you fall. Bill Boisenold, Lori Tide Brody, our guests here. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have an email question from Sue next, and she says, I've been diagnosed with Morton's neuroma in both feet. Walking is my passion, whether in the forest or 18 holes of golf. Had a cortisone injection, no relief there. My podiatrist suggested surgery, which means cutting the nerve. What are your thoughts, and have you heard from others who've had this surgery? I do have orthotics in my shoes, but they don't help. Boy, this sounds like a drastic measure.
It does sound rather drastic. I wonder how long it's been going on and how many different kinds of orthotics and shoes she's tried. Typically, people with this kind of problem have been through 100 pairs of shoes and 5 different kinds of orthotics. But, you know, it's cutting the nerve does sound rather drastic. It, you know, it depends upon just how disabling this is for her, how quickly it comes on, if anything resolves it after she's been out on her feet. What the old saying is in medicine that there's no problem so bad that it can't be worsened by surgery. So, if she's reluctant about it, then she should maybe think about a second opinion.
Yeah.
There are orthopedic surgeons who specialize in foot problems, so perhaps a different perspective. Just to triangulate a little bit and have someone else say, oh, yeah, you know, given how your feet look and given the things you've tried and your response to the cortisone injection, I think that's a good alternative. Or not.
Yeah. You know, getting Morton's neuroma, it can happen in both feet. It can be bilateral.
What is it, by the way? It's a...
It's a swelling of the nerve, typically between two of your metatarsals. So, sort of down by the ball of your foot, the nerve can swell right in there, kind of like a bubble on a tire. And then when you step down,
It gets
pinched between those two bones, and it's very painful.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, the cortisone injection is meant to beat back that swelling and get the swelling down. So,
And if it's, and we don't know from Susan's email if it's more tingling and numbness versus pain, the fact that it's in both feet, then I would have somebody want to look at her back and just make sure this really was coming from her feet and not coming from her back. Mm-hmm. But if it's really local pain, mm-hmm. then it's probably a local problem and it could be this. Mm-hmm. But
okay. Yeah, so I think getting another opinion to make sure that this is the final alternative, so before you do surgery, getting someone else's read on it.
Yeah. Let's go to Catherine in Delavan next. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, thanks. I have a complicated situation. I'll try to make a very simple question. I have a motor neuron disease, and I have a very bad peroneal nerve, especially in one leg. And so what happened is in April, all of a sudden, it would go into this violent spasm, and I would just fall. And it's almost like a cerebral palsy type of spasm that you'd see the leg, you know, twist and wiggle, and nobody has been able to figure it out. But apparently I have a very pronounced fifth metatarsal head that's exquisitely painful and forms callus formation every day, and I'm supposed to scrape it off. But I'm wondering if you have that type of exquisite pain and tenderness at a metatarsal head where you can't walk correctly. You know, I have to wear really padded shoes. Is that possible to create a spasm that significant?
I'm not sure of the question about the spasm, because the spasms are a pretty unusual situation, but it's not uncommon to have a prominent fifth metatarsal head that's painful when you walk. Mm-hmm. It's an area that develops stress fractures. It's one of the more common sites of stress fractures in the foot, so it is an area that does see a lot of load. And if you have any abnormality in your gait, or if you did have this fall, it's also possible that you fractured your metatarsal head.
Well, I fell all the time. I mean, I was falling daily.
Okay. Well, it's possible that if this metatarsal head is really painful, that in one of those falls, you fractured it. So
yeah.
I presume someone has evaluated you for that. I guess I'm not sure what your question is, except is it possible for it to be that painful? And the answer to that is yes, it is.
To create that much of a spasm. I mean, I've gone to a carbon fiber brace now to keep my ankle from turning,
mm-hmm.
and that has helped the spasm.
Mm-hmm.
And the spasm is a lot better now. But if I get it all tense, especially if I'm tense, it'll still come back.
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. the peroneal nerve affects kind of the ankle movement that is in the direction of the fifth metatarsal head, so that there is a mechanical relationship between those two things.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jim in Dubuque, Iowa, it's on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. Hey, thanks for having me on the show. Sure. Really fascinating, and I'm enjoying it tremendously and learning a whole lot. My question for you is, my mom is about only going to be 83 and is otherwise in excellent health, really great physical shape, trim, good muscular physique throughout her life, active. She developed a pretty serious scoliation, which is causing her a lot of discomfort. She's still remarkably active. But what we're concerned about, me and my partner, is it seems there could be a gait issue or something with her feet, which it seems to be completely discounted by all parties, including her physician. She does have a relatively long spine, but relative to her height, but they're not looking at the feet. And she did get some orthotics years ago, like 35 years ago, and feels that that's been taken care of. So she doesn't really want to consider the feet and the fact that there's some serious, I don't know if it's pronation, I'm not totally up on all the terminology, but my sweetie is pretty highly trained in massage therapy and has taken detailed courses in gait issues and foot issues and how back conditions can be helped by that. But there, it seems that the physicians or caregivers are focusing totally on her back and that part of her back, which seems kind of a microcosmic way of going about it, as opposed to looking at why the back got into that state in the first place. But that's our opinion. Have you seen situations where scoliation is affected by gait and or the feet and the shoes, you know, whatever it might be? That's my question, basically.
What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, it is possible. I think what you're describing is is the right way to think. I mean, there's two issues. Where's the pain coming from? And meaning, what's the cause of the pain? And then, why did the pain begin? What could be the contributing factors? And I'm not hearing you say that her feet are painful. Is that correct?
I don't think so. Yeah, my understanding is that her feet really are not an issue for her. In fact, she spends a lot of time on her feet. She cooks dinner at great length and from scratch all the time still to this day.
Okay. All right. So the question would be then, why did this back pain start? And the scoliation, I'm assuming it means scoliosis, which is excessive lateral curvature of the spine.
Exactly right.
Could be related to the feet? Yes. If there's even a moderate leg length discrepancy, that can lead to curvature changes over time. So it's possible. The question would be, is have her feet changed recently in terms of their shape? If her feet are excessively pronated or flat. I mean, so why, if it's tied to feet, what has changed in her feet that led to the changes in her back? Orthotics that are 35 years old and haven't been modified over the time frame, it's probably time to get them rechecked. And I don't really see any downsides to that. If you go to a physical therapist, they can do temporary orthotics and as a trial, so they can change the posture and the mechanics of her ankle and feet and see if it makes a difference in how her back feels over a week or two. If the temporary orthotics seems to help, then you can make a stronger case for getting permanent orthotics modified. But I'm assuming for most people, scoliosis, it's there as they develop as we're kids in teenager years. So if the lateral curvature has changed significantly in the last couple of months, then again, I think the physician would be looking at, so why? Has there been a compression fracture? Has something else changed in her spine? Again, so feet are a possibility, but certainly not the only thing to consider.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. An email from Chris in Milwaukee who says, help, woke up with bad pain in the sacroiliac joint, nearly dragging my leg. I need to be able to move.
Yeah, that is a lousy way to start the day.
Yeah, it is.
On Monday.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the question would be, it doesn't look like there was an injury unless Chris fell out of bed or was walking, sleepwalking and fell. If this is the initial episode, this has never happened before, it's important to stay active. You want to decrease activity, but bed rest for more than a day or two, you start losing ground. Mm. You can use ice over the area as a way to decrease, kind of take the edge off the pain and help with spasm. If the pain is shooting into the leg, down into the leg, below the knee and into the foot, especially if there's any numbness or tingling, that might be a time where Chris gets on the phone and goes sees her physician, or if she has a physical therapist to have her examined. But dragging the leg, if it's from pain / numbness, then you probably want to get seen to see, because there are certain exercises that are designed to get the pain out of the leg as well as to decrease the acuteness of it.
Jenny in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I'm just calling with a question about a non-union fibular sesamoid fracture in my left foot, which I've had. I got it probably because I used to dance a lot, and so it was like an overuse injury. It was diagnosed in May of 2010, so I've had it for over a year now. And I tried conservative treatment for this whole time, I guess. I was non-weight-bearing for 3 months. I used an external bone growth stimulator, which didn't do anything. And after being non-weight-bearing, there was some concern that I had RSD or CRPS because my foot was discolored. I had pain in other parts of the foot. But now that I've been weight-bearing and I've also used Lyrica, it seems like those CRPS symptoms have subsided, and my pain specialist says that I don't have CRPS. So surgery was presented to me as an option early on, but a surgical excision of the sesamoid was the option, I guess, and I didn't want to do that at first. I wanted to try conservative treatment. And then surgery was not an option when there was the fear that I had CRPS because it's very bad right. to operate, you know. So in any case, I think that surgery is now on the table again, and I'm really kind of thinking about it now because my pain, you know, I'm managing it now. It's really, I feel very lucky, you know. I'm not, like, in the type of pain that a lot of your callers are in. It ranges from, like, 0 to 4 usually. And I use a custom orthotic. It took me 4 tries to get one that worked, so I sympathize okay. with your previous caller. So that's where I'm at. And my question, I've got a few questions. I don't know if you've seen
We don't have a lot of time,
okay.
so.
I'm wondering what the biomechanical implications are of removing a sesamoid.
So which bone? So you said it's your fibula, so this is
No. It's my sesamoid.
Oh, underneath your great toe?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
The fibular sesamoid. I think it has another name too.
Okay. So, well, there's 2 little sesamoid bones underneath your great toe. So you're having trouble weight bearing down on your big toe.
Yeah. Okay. I no longer dance.
Okay. All right. Some of the biomechanical implications, they're not great. I mean, the function of the sesamoids in there is probably anthropologically from our ancestors. I don't think they play a great role in terms of the biomechanics of your foot. It's not like they offer a great mechanical advantage like your patella does for your quadriceps. So I don't see a big issue with taking them out.
Okay. No
mechanically, no. I wouldn't worry about it. If you're having a lot of pain and they've tried all else, I don't see a downside of taking them out.
And with that, we have to take a quick break, and we'll take a look at the news, weather, and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with our guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. So glad you could join us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how to avoid injuries and how to recover from them if they happen anyway. And as we know, gardening sports are great for both the body and soul, but without attention to safety, they can lead to aches and pains or even worse. And when we try to pack many of those activities in just a couple of days, there's a big risk of overusing muscles. And my guests today are physical therapists Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. They're here until 12:30 to answer your questions when you call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And be sure to visit our Facebook page. Go to The Larry Mueller Show. And if you click like on the page, we'll send you daily updates on upcoming show topics. And we'd love to have you do that. We'll be back with our guests right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Taking a look today at dealing with all those aches and pains and sprains and strains that can develop in any of us over the course of our lives. Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, Senior Physical Therapist. Lori Tyne Brody is a physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Great to have them along, and thank you for listening in. We're going to go right to the phones here. Jim in Brown Deer has been waiting a while. So, Jim, what's on your mind?
Larry, I have it's kind of a complex situation. I have a 15-year-old son who is an athlete. He's been basically working toward his high school football run for ever since he's been, 5 years old. And he had an unfortunate preseason incident where he had a hairline fracture of both his fibia and tibia, but he's walking on it. And we didn't even know it. We went into the doctor, and the doctor said, yeah, he's got a fracture in there, but it's not in the growth plate, so that's good. However, an MRI does show that he's got a tear of his ACL, but the doctor says that when he grabs his ankle and behind the calf and pulls, he says it just doesn't feel like a torn ACL. So we're going to go in and get a second opinion. But the problem here is that it looks like the way to correct a torn ACL is to essentially drill into both sides of the knee, and that would mean drilling into the growth plate. And his growth plates are still wide open, and that's just simply not an option. Is there anything that can be done for somebody who has, who has wide open growth plates, or is this just too complicated of things to even address here?
Well, several good questions. They can still do surgery on kids with open growth plates. They've come up with techniques to circumvent the growth plate issue. That being said, if his knee is stable, he may not need to have surgery at this point. If his menisci are intact, was there a specific injury where he sustained the fracture and the ACL tear, is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. He was cutting during practice, and, you know, bam, that was it.
Okay. And for the most part, we're not talking about anything this season anymore, correct?
Well, I mean, the season is still going on. The kid would love to get back in, but, I mean, he's walking on it. I just don't think that it's going to be possible.
Mm.
And we're now concerned that, you know, does this mean that his high school sports is over? I mean, this is just going to crush.
No. What are his other sports?
He does track and baseball.
Okay.
But football is really his passionate.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's, you know, I would say let's put this season aside and let's get him rehabbed. So get that other opinion. You should get an official instrumented test of his ACL laxity. Have they done that, like a KT2000?
No.
Okay, well, you should have those kinds of things done to assess his laxity. And then he should get into a good rehab program, because you don't want to have another episode of instability, because the next time around he may tear his meniscus, and that combination is just bad for his knee. So you want to protect the remaining structures in his knee as your first priority. And then you can try him out through the rest of the year, see how he does in track, see how he does in baseball, because particularly track is not a high demand for the knee. It's the cutting, pivoting, stopping, starting thing that's going to put the most stress on the ACL. So he can take the rest of this year to rehab his knee, try some sports and see how it does. And you'll have a little bit of, you can buy yourself some time, to get some closure in his growth plates in case you do decide you want to have a reconstruction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. An email from Amanda in Williams Bay. She says, I'm a healthy 34-year-old. However, I've had a dull, constant aching pain in my lower back, the small of my back, for a month and a half now. I do not recall doing anything to cause this. I try to do yoga 3-4 times a week. Since this pain has started, there are certain poses that make this position or this portion of my back feel very weak, and a warm sensation occurs there. My posture is poor unless I notice it and correct it. I do have quite an arch in my back. Also, I do sit at a desk all day. Any suggestions?
Yeah, a couple things. The fact that it's going on for a month and a half, it's time to change something. And posture can certainly be an issue. And if you have a bit of an accentuated arch and you're sitting, it's good to have arch support, similar to people who have flat feet, and we need some degree of arch in our foot for it to function as well as we would like. There are different kinds of lumbar supports or cushions that you can put in the small of the back. One of the things to try initially maybe is to taking a towel and rolling it up and putting in the small of her back as she's sitting, and if that seems to help, then buying something a little more permanent, you know, would be worth considering. If she's sitting all day long, having a good chair that fits her in terms of height, and you can vary the back support, also can be critical. So a chair, the more adjustments you have in your office, in your desk chair, the better. And there are some you can adjust, you know, the armrests and the tilt of the seat and the tilt of the back. Again, the more flexibility you have in the chair itself, the better chance that it will fit you. So that would be important to do. In terms of the yoga, any position that feels like there's strain or more than a moderate stretch, I would modify the pose or position and maybe just back off on those a little bit, and just give the back a chance to heal. Generally, yoga poses where the trunk is bent forward combined with twisting tends to put a little more stress on the back, so maybe backing off on those a little bit until his ache starts subsiding for her.
Jean in Menominee, hello to you.
Oh, pretty good.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I would like to tell the therapist to thank you for her advice and getting a second opinion.
Oh.
Oh.
Well, at the end of the month, I'm having my ankle surgery. Almost 2 years ago, I fell, and I knew it was broken, but the orthopedic surgeon actually told me it wasn't. And he kind of strung me along for a year and a half, and I got so mad, and I called you guys, and she said, get a second opinion. Went to the podiatrist, and he says, yeah, your ankle was broken. Look at that.
Oh, good grief. Well, good. So you're going to get it fixed now?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Actually, it's been a long haul. We tried orthotics,
mm-hmm.
and that didn't work. And so he did a stress test on my ankle to see how far they would go.
Mm-hmm.
My right ankle is, completely flat. He can turn it all the way over.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Oh, my goodness.
So he's going to weave some cartilage into my ankle.
Okay.
On the 29th of this month.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Well, I'm glad you're finally getting some closure on that.
My ankle is still swollen. My foot still hurts every day.
Oh,
dear. Well, hopefully that's going to change after the end of the month. So, but just know you're digging yourself out of a deep hole, so don't expect an overnight fix. It's going to take
recover. I have a cast. He said I'll have a cast for 6 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then think about...
And I have a four-year-old that will decorate it nicely.
Nice. Very good. And then think about getting in a pool to start your rehab so that your ankle has some limited weight-bearing time to kind of accommodate.
Our physical therapist with our hospital just built a building, and they got a therapy pool now.
There you go.
Good.
You're all set then.
Yeah, I'm excited. I just want to be able to walk and run with my son.
Yeah, you bet.
Light at the end of the tunnel is always a good thing.
And thanks for calling. It's always nice to hear that the advice is...
That it works sometimes.
It works. Thanks, Gene. Thank you very much for calling. Sue in Green Bay says, other than learning to fly, any suggestions for avoiding falling on the ice? One tip that I have, wear ice fishing cleats. Not only are they the fashionable, she's got a little frown there, but I think they've significantly reduced the number of spills I've had.
Yeah, definitely. Bill and I were just talking. It's time to go out and think about your yak tracks or those other, there's different systems that go on the bottom of your shoes. So the ice fishing cleats are probably the original, and now the yak tracks, they make them for running, they make them for walking, and there's other versions of that. But those are very useful. Not necessarily on the black ice. That requires people just to be careful, to look and be on the lookout for that black ice.
Yeah, when we've had a little bit of rain or mist and it's snow on top of it, you kind of have to assume there is black ice out there.
Yeah.
And so shortening your stride or steps a little bit until you get a feel for what's underneath that snow.
Yeah.
And if your hands are free, having a walking stick, a couple of walking sticks, if you're going out for leisure walking, not that you need them, but that they're there in case of that loss of balance.
And Sarah emailed, both my adult children work in food preparation jobs and are standing most of the day. Is there advice for them about body mechanics or posture while doing such work? My daughter developed sciatica years ago as a cashier, and it was quite serious.
Yeah. Yeah, as we've always said, good shoes are useful. And if you're in a fairly stationary spot, having your work get you a mat, a good shock absorptive mat, so all those loads are not being transmitted up to your spine. And then posture, yes, tucking in your tummy, tucking your tail under so that your pelvis is nice and stable. It'll give you a stable base off which you can move. Then if there's a cabinet, opening the door and putting one foot up and just changing your posture periodically so you're not in the same position. If you're tall, a lot of times the things are at a bad height, so you have to bend over. Adjusting your workstation to the best of your ability to accommodate that.
Yeah, the mats can help a lot. Just the floors are hard. And besides helping with slipping the mats, but I've had some people where besides the mat, I've had them purchase some sort of a sole insert, like a sorbethane material. It just absorbs some of the load or shock so it doesn't get up into the spine over the course of the day.
Yeah, a very similar question from a 26-year-old, Greg, who's working in a factory standing all day watching the machine and picking stuff from boxes. Knees hurt a lot. Yes. What can I do? Exercise, drugs, same kinds of things that we just got done talking about here, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, just to extend to the next level, exercising, keeping your hips, your quadriceps, your calf muscles, your back, everything strong. You know, people who stand all day long, they go home at the end of the day and they say, I'm exhausted. I've been on my feet all day. But they really haven't had any physical activity. You know, it's only marginally better than sitting all day. And research shows that people who sit all day, even if they go out and have an hour of exercise in the evening, it doesn't offset 8 hours of sitting. And I'd suggest that probably similarly doesn't offset 8 hours of standing. So, you know, to the best of your ability, change your posture. So if you're standing and you have the opportunity to stop and do some squats, okay? So every 10 minutes, squat three times, do three toe raises, stand and do some leg lifts to the side, five to one side, five to the other, but do different movements instead of just standing in the same spot all day.
Erin in Milwaukee, we're on to you. Hi, Erin.
Hi. I'm a little frustrated with needing to exercise. I'm quite a bit overweight. I am trying to get, you know, healthy the past few years. Every time, you know, they say, well, half an hour of walking or 15 minutes of biking or, you know, even as little as that. I'm active in day-to-day routines and stuff, but when I attempt to do any kind of exercise within relatively short order, I somehow injure myself, and then I'm really not moving around that much. And the latest, you know, I've tried Tai Chi, and I ended up maybe tearing my meniscus. I went to physical therapy for that. That was very painful. I tried walking half an hour, you know, a day that they suggest, you know, just basic half an hour, and I got plantar fasciitis after 3 months and had 9 months of
right
pain. So
sure.
The latest thing is just doing 15 minutes on my bike, which is, you know, a stationary bike.
Mm-hmm.
And I started having problems where at night I'd turn over and my kneecap would pop out and back in. And so it's very frustrating for someone that's overweight trying to get healthy to find, you know, basic exercises that are going to make me healthier. So I'm wondering if you have a suggestion.
Do you have access to a pool?
Well, I'm part of the Y, you know, and I injured myself at the Y, so I haven't done that. But I'm very sensitive to chlorine, which creates a problem because I know pools would, you know, they kind of take away some of the weight while you can move.
Mm-hmm.
And I can retry it. I have tried it a couple times and then been really affected by the chlorine.
Okay. Well, one of the issues is something you've mentioned, and that is whenever you try something for any length of time, you get injured. So what I hear is that you need to cross train. So if you can get in the pool one day, and you can walk one day, and you can ride the bike one day, and maybe we can think of something else on another day that's available at the Y, you could still exercise several days a week, but not overdo any one thing. Or similarly, if you're going to the Y, you could walk for 15 minutes and then get in the pool for 15 minutes of exercise so that your chlorine exposure was less.
Aren't there pools that don't have chlorine?
Yes, there are salt water pools. Right. So I don't know what's available to you. If
in
you have a membership
Milwaukee?
At the Milwaukee should have a salt water pool somewhere.
Yeah, there is one that I'm aware of, and I can't afford it. I can't afford the...
No.
Yeah. But so that's why I'm kind of thinking the cross training might be the way to go for you. So you've tried...
I do the walking and the biking. Those are the two things that I do. And within 4 days, this is what happens. And when I can't even do basic, like going to the store, with, you know, getting up, you know, doing 3 days and then a week off.
Yep. No, I hear you. So you're not getting this dosed properly for you. So somebody could help you get this dose properly. So maybe you only do 5 minutes of walking and you build yourself up. Also, you know, again, if you have access to the Y, a gentle weight training program would be dynamite for you. It might help with some of the plantar fasciitis issues. It might help with some of the knee issues on the bike by having more core strengthening. So you could combine some strengthening, some walking, some biking, some pool stuff, and come up with a program that works for you.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. And I would assume there'd be people at the Y that could help with that a little bit.
I would think
right.
so.
Yeah.
I would hope so. Good luck, Erin. I appreciate your call.
Yep, I understand her frustration.
We have Don in Detroit, Michigan up next. Don, hello.
Hello. I was wondering if I was going to make it on. I think you're about out of time.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a knee problem. To start off with, I've been a long-distance runner for a bit over 50 years now. I'm just about to turn 65, and I had a torn medial meniscus about 12 years ago. It was repaired, did quite well for a while, but it's become a problem again. I've tried to do, you know, a variety of different cross-training sorts of things. There is significant arthritis in that knee. What I'm wondering about right now is I have recently run across a knee brace device which uses an electrical stimulation current, and they are claiming, and this is FDA approved, they are claiming that it has increased joint space. You know, it's been observed. And I'm wondering if you know anything about that or if you have any other recommendations.
What's the name of the brace?
Bionicare.
Okay. There are joint unloader braces for
this,
people.
This is an unloader, but it also has the electrical stimulation.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the electrical stimulation adds to it. There's not a lot of substantive research on the effects of electrical stimulation. I don't know what they're stimulating, if they're saying they're improving the thickness of your articular cartilage. I don't know what the claims are about the electrical stimulation.
That is what they are saying.
Well, I don't think there's a lot of substantive research to support that claim. But that claim aside, the unloader braces do work for many people. So what they are, these are specially designed braces with a three-point system that shifts the weight-bearing load in the knee joint away from the involved compartment. There's three compartments in your knee, to the uninvolved. So they work if you have an uninvolved compartment to shift the weight to. If you have involvement in both the medial and lateral side of the knee, they don't really work because you're shifting the weight from one bad compartment to another. But if the unloader brace works for you, and hopefully they would let you have a trial of it to see if it helps you, go ahead and give it a try. The electrical stimulation claims I'd have issue with, but the unloader I would support.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks
very much for calling. Kay is 20 weeks pregnant and is experiencing quite a bit of joint pain in her shoulders and elbows. Specifically, not sure, but I'm guessing it has to do with the pregnancy and also having to sleep on my side. I'm usually a back sleeper. Sleeping is uncomfortable and constantly tossing and turning. Anything I can do to stretch or strengthen my joints?
Yeah, sticking with that pool theme, I'd probably get in a pool to do some general strengthening exercises. The hormonal changes, connective tissue changes can affect your joints. And if she's sleeping in positions she's not used to, that can be exacerbated by the pregnancy. So the pool is a really great place to get in and do some general exercise to improve her strength and her overall condition.
Yeah, also, depending on how firm her mattress is, sometimes a firm mattress at some times of life is a good thing, but it can be too firm, especially with some of the joint laxity. And maybe trying some sort of a mattress pad, just add a little more cushion, may help a little bit in terms of the discomfort of the shoulders in particular. And using pillows to support the top arm, if she's lying on her side, to have that top arm supported, can help a little bit as well.
Okay. And with that, we are about out of time here in 30 seconds. Have you got a final tip for us?
Well, we had a lot of foot calls today. Mm-hmm. I think, again, coming back to footwear is really important. And if people have orthotics, sometimes we outgrow them. And so getting, you know, if it's been a couple of years and they start having more foot or knee problems, having that orthotic checked, make sure it still fits them can be worthwhile.
And if you develop problems like bunions or Morton's neuromas or things like that, you know, realize that if you have surgery on that, that changes the mechanics of your foot. And so you can't always just go back to doing what you're doing and expect that now it's going to be fine. The mechanics are probably changed, and you may need some new exercises or new orthotics or something to help accommodate for that change.
Yeah. And with that, we are out of time. Bill, Lori, you'll be back. Actually, next month, you'll be back on the fourth Monday instead of the third
Correct.
Monday.
That's so right. A little change.
Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. Bill Boisenall, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine, our guest. They'll be back the fourth Monday of next month.
October.
Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.